But without further ado, we are going to bring in State Senator Gustavo Rivera, who is really one of those champions that you may not know about yet, but you're going to know about now. And he is fighting for
and
us.
Honestly,
in a way that
even
we really
people
need.
In New York probably don't, because most people here don't know who their congressperson is, let alone their state
senator or state representative. Well, let's make him famous. How about
that? We're going to make him famous on our little show.
Gustavo Rivera, Senator Rivera, welcome to Generational Change.
It is a great pleasure to be with you. By the way, you're just saying that it has to be no pressure.
No pressure.
You know what? I take it. It's what builds diamonds after all. And I have no issue with it, with being put on that place where it's up to us. And
I know enough New Yorkers that can't see the world outside of New York. So.
That is true. And so, there's, I don't remember who the famous poet was, but he said, I wouldn't leave New York to go to heaven.
No. Have you ever seen the picture, The World According to a New Yorker? And it's like this giant map of New York. And then you see like Asia and like these little things.
I have not seen that, but I certainly know what you mean. I'm not originally
from here.
You know
what I'm talking about.
Yes, I'm not originally from here. I was born and raised in Puerto Rico, but I got to New York in 98. Moved to the Bronx in 2000 and have become completely enamored with this gorgeous city and particularly my home borough of the Bronx. I'm a surrogate New Yorker through and through. So I understand that little map thing.
I don't know. One might say that a Puerto Rican is almost like another borough of New York in some ways. Like, exactly. I don't think it's not that far of a stretch.
You are correct. It's certainly either New York or Florida. But matter of fact, when I was in 2008, I was the constituency director for Obama in Florida, and the state director told me, since I was Puerto Rican, born in Puerto Rico, who was living in New York and now working in Florida, I was predestined to end up in Florida. And I'm telling him, nah, I'm good. I'm going to work here, and then I'm going to get the hell out. My family's there.
We heard our reputation.
And not only that, but we're going to be underwater in 10 years. So
I wouldn't say 10, but it's going to happen if we don't make drastic changes.
And my family's there, though. My family's there, so I do visit. But
what part are they in? Where are they?
They're in Port St. Lucie.
Oh, okay.
Not too far, about an hour and a half.
No, yeah.
But one of those places, this is all you need to know about Port St. Lucie. If you've never been, every restaurant is a chain restaurant. So
is true. But on the upside, you can get waterfront property. They are a lot more affordable than you can get waterfront property down in the Tri-County.
Certainly. But you have to live in Port St. Lucie.
I mean, you have to live in Port St. Lucie.
That is true.
Yeah, I don't want to, just in case my parents or my brother sees this.
He's
I love
not
you
hating
your town
on you, Port St. Lucie. We're not hating on you.
Yeah, exactly.
So, what we did talk about with Sam Cedar, and obviously we'd love to discuss with you, I think it would be a great way to break the ice. If you can talk about your fellow Puerto Rican, AOC, and the impact that she has had in terms of this progressive movement in New York City. And I think it's very real. I think that if you look at all of the city council representatives that just won, that were either part of DSA or the Sunrise Movement, you know, these are individuals who are absolutely going to fight for the New York Health Act. And, you know, little by little, you build these pieces on the chessboard. And then, of course, the biggest one of all, you know, India Walton winning the mayoral primary in Buffalo.
It's awesome.
I think is just... I mean, talk about that's like putting a queen on the chessboard. Mm-hmm. That's how big a move that is, as far as I'm concerned. Would love to hear your thoughts on that.
Well, one thing at a time. First of all, as far as AOC is concerned, the sister's amazing. I don't share a district with her because I'm in the West Bronx and she's in the East Bronx and crosses over into Queens. But I've had a bit of time to connect with her and kind of build with her. And bottom line is that she is exceptional. Let's be honest here. There's very few people who have the amount of skill that she does. As somebody who before I ran for office in 2010, I had been doing politics and government for a decade. And I was kind of prepared to become a senator because I had worked with other people to get them prepared to run for different offices. Homegirl was a bartender. And then literally overnight, she was then on a cover of magazines all over the country. And during this time, did not let it go to her head, kept her focus, continued to talk about the issues that she cares about, has not lost it. I think she's an exceptional human. And particularly considering that it is a young Latina that is moving the Overton window the way that she has and kind of inspiring so many people, I want nothing but for her to succeed. I'll tell you the truth.
Same as us.
Yeah. And I think that you don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. Yes, there is a limit to what she can do on Capitol Hill. I think most people need to understand that. But what she has done, yep. not just in her district, but throughout the city of New York, you can see the change. Like, you really can. And mm-hmm. I saw it even before the mayoral election. And I do believe that if she had endorsed, whether it was, you know, Maya or somebody else, if she had endorsed probably back in March, it probably would have made the difference in the election.
That just goes
to show you how big of a coalition she has built in such a short period of time.
You're probably right about that. And to focus on the Bronx in particular, the Bronx where I have been, so I've been a state senator for 11 years, which, you know, stay off my lawn, kids, stay off my damn lawn. But I've been a senator for 11 years. And in that time, I have had to fight so many battles with right-wing knuckleheads, machine knuckleheads here in the Bronx. And there's been some folks that are good along the way. But there was so much rut in elected officials, like all the way up and down. And there has been such a shift in the last 4-6 years. And certainly, as you talk about this primary election that just happened a couple, like a month ago, I guess. And for those folks who are around the country, these districts are so Democratic that the primary is really the general, right? It's really the election. And in most of these city council races, you're going to have a bunch of women, a bunch of progressive young women, the likes of which would have never happened 6 or 8 years ago in the Bronx. And then you expand to look at the rest of the state. As you said, I got to be honest, because I was paying so much attention to what was happening in the city in the Bronx. I had heard of this sister's name out in Buffalo, but I certainly wasn't going to think this guy who is currently the mayor, right? He hasn't, you know, Byron Brown. He used to be a state senator. So as somebody, I didn't serve with him, but I worked in the Senate before I was a senator. So I knew the guy, and I an establishment guy. He's going to be there for a while. And so I was shocked, just like, you know, everybody else. I guess the only people who weren't shocked, certainly the people in her campaign and Buffalonians, if that's what they call themselves. I apologize if it's not. Buffalonians or Buffalunans? I don't know. I think it's Buffalonians. I think that's
Buffalo
the right.
Wingers.
But no.
People from Buffalo who obviously felt that there needed to be a different direction. And she is. And the greatest thing about this sister, and again, I've never actually met her yet, but the fact that she has remained consistent, like she's saying right now, it's like, no, I said what I said, and I meant what I said, and what I'm going to seek as far as policies when I am in office are, I don't know, the things that I ran on.
It's crazy.
Yeah, no,
so crazy.
So my Democratic colleagues need to learn a little bit more about what you kind of ran on it, bro. So maybe you should actually do it, or at least try to. But sometimes it's a little. Sometimes I got to deal with some of my more moderate colleagues, and you know that's what happens.
Speaking of moderate colleagues, obviously, yeah. You know, the New York Health Act is it's an absolute good. You know, we've reviewed marginally, you know, not every fine tooth comb detail, but it basically.
How much time you got? I can do the whole thing.
No, we got plenty. But I do think that what I always tell people about universal health care is that the most basic way to understand it is that you're removing the for-profit middlemen in between you and your doctor. There is almost nobody. And we didn't get a chance to talk about this with Sam, but I actually was in Tampa this weekend and I happened to stop by the Turning Point USA event that, you know, the as far right as you get, you know, the mm-hmm. Charlie Kirks of the world. And I had this conversation with this, you know, Army veteran of like 4 decades. And the thing that we absolutely agreed on was the removal of the for-profit middlemen in between you and your doctor.
This That's right.
is a winning issue because most people, especially progressives and libertarians, really agree when it comes to this waste in our healthcare system. It is absolutely not necessary, and it makes all the sense in the world, but you clearly hit a roadblock, and I'm curious as to why. We're curious as to why.
Yeah, like where did this go? What happened?
And we'll dig as deeply as you want. But I'll give you the top line is that there is a way there. The status, you know, what you know the definition of inertia, right? A yes. body in motion or at rest continues in that state unless an outside force acts upon it, right? And you know the definition of institution. Just rule governed behavior that endures. I'm also a political science professor, just in case you didn't know.
I was going to say, yeah. You're sounding very professorial. Go ahead.
So when you have, so take those two things together, institutional inertia, right? So you have a set of rule governed behavior that endures, that outlasts all of us, and that has existed for a while, and we all are used to things working a certain way. So everybody is of the mind, this is just the way it works. And then to be able to change that takes an enormous amount of force, an enormous amount of thing to change the direction. So part of the problem is that there is people are stuck in this mindset that this is just the way it is, that trying to do it a different way might be too difficult, might be too hard. And this is just particularly what I call, see, because your question is specific about how do we not, have we not gotten to the next level, which is getting a damn vote in the floor of the Senate. And part of it is what I call the bird in the hand problem. And that is that there are some folks, and we can talk about the uninsured day and night, and we should, but it reminds me, do you remember the movie Sicko?
Yes, Michael Moore's best film.
Right, Michael Moore's it was fantastic, and I remember seeing it, and remember the first 6 minutes or something, he was telling horrible stories, and he's saying, but this is not a story about this person because they didn't have insurance, and this is not a story about this person. We're talking about the people who are insured, right?
Yeah.
So the sad reality is that there's some folks, particularly in public sector unions, and some of the leadership in public sector unions who have legitimate concerns about what I call the bird in the hand problem. They've been able to secure for themselves and their membership something that in comparison to what is available to the rest of the people is actually much better, right? It is still an insurance product, and we could certainly dig deep into why that's just a broken system to begin with, but it is still a better insurance product than what is available to a lot of other folks, and more specifically, one that they have given up things to be able to achieve over the years. And so it is hard for many of these folks to say, like, I got this right now. It is in a contract. We got the contract. We got this. What do you got over there? Seriously, you got something that's better? I don't know. And what have I given up? Are you going to be able to give me back what I've given up, what we've given up collectively to be able to get this, which I have in the hand right now? So when you take those two, and then we can get into, you know, particular criticisms and misinformation and all that sort of stuff. But I would think that those are the two basic things, the overall changing the status quo, kind of getting people to think that there is a different way that this can and must be done. When you think about the fact that for literally generations, insurance companies, big hospitals, anybody that makes money in healthcare has pumped money into the public sphere with this notion that, like, hey, just the way it is, right? So that's part of it. And then specifically in the state of New York, unfortunately, some of my brothers and sisters in labor, because I'm actually a unionized person, I since I teach part time, I'm a member of NYSET, so I'm a member of New York State United Teachers, as well as it's not what I do full time. I'm a senator, but there's some public sector unions have a big issue with giving this up, with giving the bird in the hand up.
Yeah. And I think that that's no small part due to the mass misinformation campaigns that are constantly put out there by parties that are obviously against this. Usually it's financial interest. I can't think of any other motive better than profit, mm-hmm. but they scare them. It's very fear mongering. It's, oh, you're going to lose your insurance. You're going to lose your, and nobody stops to really think how ludicrous it is that we live in a system where healthcare is tied to employment. When mm-hmm. they have nothing to do with each other. Now, my husband's a physician, and generally physicians are not very pro Medicare for All because they're thinking about what they perceive will affect their bottom line. But what's interesting is my husband also loves the idea of not having to pay for his employees' health insurance. So
I like that hobby of yours. And probably there's probably some folks that he has to employ full time to actually, as opposed to providing care for people, to actually fight with insurance companies.
Yeah, there's that, and the amount of aggravation. And I said to him, let's say, even if I told you that you might make less money, let's say you'd make less money, but gone is all the aggravation of dealing with managed care, he would take that in a minute. Like, the amount of aggravation that he has in dealing with what he can and can't do, what is and isn't approved, how he has to write things up, the coding, the seminars, all of the nonsense, that affects their quality of life. It's mm-hmm. not pleasurable to practice medicine in those conditions. Florida is horrible regarding managed care, and it's not a benefit to doctors.
Yeah, no, we agree. But again, there's a lot of it that are misconceptions, misinformation that's been put out there. By the way, Robert is a good friend out from Long Island.
Yes, he is. Long Island activist.
Yes, the good spina, the good, you know, what do you call it? The espina is thorn. The good thorn.
Buena espina.
He's Robert Goodthorn. Buena espina. And the answer to his question, is that we were not able to reach a consensus within the conference. It's that simple. What we have been able now, I'll back up for a second for folks that might not know about the context of New York State. One of the things that I will say that I'm exceedingly proud of belonging to a Democratic majority and a supermajority at that, in the last couple of years, 3 years that we have been in the majority, the things that we have been able to achieve, we've been able to kind of get things off of the table that have been held up by a Republican majority in the Senate and by our governor. We might want to talk about that guy too.
We can talk about that.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. We can definitely do that.
We'll talk about the New Yorker.
But there's many things that we've been able to achieve in the last 3 years, which have been held up for a very, very long time. Just this year, whether it was legalization of marijuana, not on our terms, on the terms of having social justice at the corner as the cornerstone of it, and not just profit, not just how much revenue is going to bring, but whether it looks out for trying to erase the harm that has been caused by the drug war for a long time and providing economic opportunities for people who might have been involved in the illicit trade, as well as dealing with their records going backwards. So all of these things were at the core of our bill, which were not in the core of the governor's bill, by the way, or the bill that I passed that actually creates a fund for an opioid settlement fund that actually guarantees that the money will strictly be used for treatment and for recovery and for harm reduction, as opposed to going into the general fund. The governor can do whatever the hell he wants with it. And that's something that we were able to get just this year done. And I'm just talking about, the Walking While Trans ban, which we got done a little bit earlier in the year, where it was we changed the state law because the way that it worked, it was that so many trans, particularly trans women of color, were being stopped and accused of being potentially being sex workers and then arrested and put through the criminal justice system, as far as bail reform and a whole bunch of other things. So we've been able to achieve that. In this case, it is something that I have been working very hard to get my colleagues on board with. We got more sponsors this year than we've ever gotten before.
Oh yeah.
But we were not able to reach a consensus. And for it to reach the floor, there needs to be a consensus. But there was some big movement this year. The reality is, I mean, the Rona messed up so many things, right? Last year, I would remind people in 2019, because a year ago was 2020, which is still kind of nuts.
We lost a year.
And we did, because in 2019, we did a series of hearings. The Assembly and the Senate in the state of New York did a series of hearings around the state. And we walked into January with a level of energy and of momentum that we were going to build on to get it done last year. Then the Rona came and everything kind of got thrown up in disarray and we had to kind of start again. But I believe, and you said this at the beginning of the segment, I do believe that we have a real opportunity to pass it next year. And I will be doing a lot of work off season, so to speak, because right now we're technically not in session. We ended our session in mid-June, but we're going to be doing a lot of building during these off months, building up to January when we're going to come up with more energy, and I'm going to do a lot of stuff during the off season to get myself ready. It's just like my Knicks.
Well,
there's a sports reference.
The only issue I really have with Thibodeau is that I think he overruns his players, and I think
he goes right. At, you do you see
that,
what you did?
You saw that with you saw that with Julius. He was absolutely.
But see, yeah. there's a learning process, my brother. They're going to be all healthy. There's like they got to the first round. They won a game. It was just a game, but nobody expected them to do that. And they ended the season in a hell of a run. I see that Jen is really loving all of this. So I'm just going to say.
I actually really like basketball.
Gustavo, all I can tell you
I just mock him because it's all about sports for him.
All day I dream about sports.
He dreams about sports.
I am a Net fan, but I got to tell you, there is nothing like the Garden.
He's from there.
You're a fan of the New Jersey Nets.
I'm happy for you, bro. Let me tell you, when
I'm happy for you, bro.
Thank you. Thank you. Let me tell you, when I was a disgruntled Net fan all those years when you had Ewing, and I still remember I was able to find out about the Jason Kidd trade before anybody else did. And everyone was like, do you think it's going to make that big of a deal? I'm like, oh, it's going to make a big deal. All right.
I know. It kept me up
that
at night.
First season, 2002, that as a sports fan was one of the greatest years of my life. It was just something. And being a Knicks fan and having been, you know, suffering for so many years, just that experience and the sound of that garden in that, especially in those first couple of games against Atlanta, it was like all those frustrations had been built up for so long. It was the garden was alive and it was back. It was beautiful.
Now, I didn't. Now, I make government money, so I can't afford. I couldn't afford to go there. But
seriously, basketball is a rich person spectator sport. It really is. Like,
but my most, one of my most, as somebody who values my alone time, one of my most prized possessions is this bad boy you see right here, which is a 70-inch television.
Yeah,
and I have a large sound system, and it was like I was in the garden right here. It was I kind of shed a couple of tears. It was fantastic.
Well, at least I know that you and I, when the time comes where we are up in New York, at least we'll be able to talk about things other than politics. That's
absolutely.
I'm a San Antonio Spurs fan. So
and listen, they're a great team. They're a great team. But by the way, if you do come to New York, then you got to come to my district, to Arthur Avenue.
Yes.
Arthur Avenue, which is the
I'll go anywhere area. As long as you offer me good food, and I know it's there.
Bam. Exactly. Yes. But getting back to the original to the original thing, because I mentioned the Knicks just because I'm thinking this is so this year for the Knicks was like this year for the New York Health Act. There was like that we showed some real momentum. We couldn't get it over the finish line.
We just got to keep it going.
Exactly. And off season. In the off season, I'm not letting up. I had a conversation with my colleague in the assembly. His name is Dick Gottfried, who's the chair of the health committee in the assembly and the sponsor of the bill in the assembly. And we had a kind of a meeting of the minds today to talk about some of the stuff that we need to do in the next couple of months about it. So I feel good about next year, and I'm going to do a lot of work between now and next year to do it.
So you did mention the governor, and unfortunately,
embroiled
in scandal. He is a New Yorker, and he gets things done not for the people, but for the Cuomo family.
Can I tell you something?
Yeah. Please.
I hope that people don't take this the wrong way, but I'm a very understanding individual. I'm a very open-minded individual. But if you're a homosexual, I am going to judge you for that sexual orientation. You need to go get your stuff checked out. There's something wrong with you. You need some therapy or something. If you're a homosexual, you're wrong.
There a support base for him?
No, there really is. It's scary.
There's a Democratic contingency?
Gustavo, I'll tell you this. We've had Lindsay Boylan on the podcast, and I've seen the comments going in her direction. How dare you challenge our great governor? He is a good man in this. And I'm just thinking, my God, this is like, it's like a psychosis.
Yeah, but the thing is, bro, like this comes from people who don't really know him. That's all it is. This comes from people who don't really know him. I've been in the state legislature for as long as he's been governor. And for the first couple of years, and I will admit this, like, I kind of saw who he was a long time ago, but I did not have the spine to actually stand up to him for years. As a junior member of a minority party, I mean, in the Senate, I was a minority member in the Democratic conference for a long time, and somebody who wanted certain bills to pass, et cetera. And it kept me up at night because I was like, this guy's terrible. And I can't really, but a couple of years ago, I don't remember exactly what it was, but there was something that clicked in my brain. I was like, I can't do it. I cannot do it. And I will not do it anymore. And I'm going to do, look at this. Nothing personal. I was referring to nipples. What are you doing? Why? Don't bring up his nipple bars. Don't do it. Don't do it. Now that's going to be in your brain. But in all honesty, just as from a governance perspective, this is somebody who unfortunately, sadly, and tragically does not really believe in anything. He is incredibly smart, surrounds himself with very smart people. He's very capable and understands governance. But ultimately, everything he does is about himself. It is about making himself look good.
It's just his own thing.
That's it. That's it. Yeah. And that's all you need to know about him. But the thing is
that
people don't
know that.
He could
take his little brother Fredo and go home.
But when you had him on TV every single day, in comparison to that orange pile of feces that was sitting in the White House at the time, he looked magnificent.
That's true.
And I have to admit that he made me feel a little bit more like,
right. Low bar. There was a low bar.
Precisely.
Look what we've done.
You know something? God. You're really not allowed to talk about me in that way. It's really, really terrible. I did a really, really incredible job. Cuomo's a terrible guy. He did a terrible job. I did a great job. Really incredible job.
We agree on half of that.
You're a criminal. That's you're great. Being indicted.
That's really great. And listen.
Cittolini.
Just remember something, Mr. Senator Rivera. There is no extradition from Florida to New York. You can't get me. You're never going to get me. Believe me.
Oh, no. We're stuck
down there, bro. I'm gonna be down there. I'm gonna be down there for in a couple of months to visit my family. I'll just visit you as well. No, I won't really, because he's a former. Just for the record, only kidding. I do think he is a festering pile of orange feces.
But may I say that I thought that about him in the 80s? Like, nothing changed. He was him the whole time. Because we
know, again, New Yorkers know who he is.
That's what he always says. He's like, we know exactly.
Precisely. And as far as Cuomo, as far as the New York Health Act is concerned, like, of course, I am hoping that he will not be around for that long. Let's just be clear about that. There is a process of impeachment that potentially might happen. The assembly is still doing an investigation. There's an investigation by the attorney general, who I trust to do her job. Because
we're talking about the nursing home fiasco, which, see, that's the legit. I mean, look, we could talk about the harassment stuff. And I do believe these women. I have no reason not to.
I do too.
But from him doing his job perspective, there's a serious thing here with this nursing home situation.
Absolutely.
Like, that's that needs to be investigated.
I'm the chair of the health committee in the Senate, and I co-chaired about 13 hours of hearings last year on this issue. So it's like, I am deeply like knowledgeable on where there were breakdowns and where I was like, there's something here. Now I don't have investigative capability, and I don't have the subpoena power that say the Eastern District does, but the FBI agents and the attorneys from the Eastern District that I sat with months ago to actually give 3 hours of a 3-hour conversation about our good friend Cuomo, they sure have the capacity to do that. So that's happening. So there's an investigation happening. There's potential. So all of this is to say, as it relates to the New York Health Act, ultimately, with this guy, you can't ever convince him that something is the right thing to do. You just have to make him do it by making it a political win for him, right? That's why he does anything. So if he is still around, I hope he's not. And Christ Almighty, we can't have him be the Democratic nominee next year. That would be horrendous. But that's, you know, as we say in Spanish, estos son otros 20 pesos. That's another story we'll tell next year. But there is but as far as the New York Health Act is concerned, we need to actually pass it and put it on his desk and then put pressure on him so he signs it. And I'll be the first one standing behind him going like, good man. You did the right thing, bro.
Biggest, and he is. I mean, we don't have to say
narcissist,
any words.
Misogynist. I could come up with a bunch.
You could have a couple of Spanish words in derogatory to throw in there if you want to. But my
just
point is,
a little bit.
I don't care who signs it into
exactly.
law. Just freaking sign it into law.
And then I think he should be prosecuted for all the disgusting things he's done.
Absolutely.
But that's a side note.
That might happen beforehand. The part of it is like we have to get to a point where we get a consensus in the conference. And look, there is real progress on that.
How far away are you? Like, how many people shy are you from getting on board to really make this happen?
I don't know the exact number on that, because we have just as far as for folks out of state that are not in the state of New York, the state Senate has 63 members. There's 43 members of the Democratic Conference, and of them, 33 are co-sponsors of the Senate of this bill. So we have a majority to be able to pass it if it gets to the floor. But there has to be a consensus formed. And by the way, I will tell you this, and this is to the credit of the goes to the leader on this. We have gotten really, really complicated and difficult stuff done, whether it was the taxation on the wealthy that we managed to get done this year, whether it was the marijuana bill, whether it was the bail reform that we got done last year, whether it was the housing reform that we got done 2 years, I think 3 years ago at this point. The Rona kind of messes everything up for me. But all of these things were a product of the leader bringing folks together, folks that might not be in the same place, and being able to get a consensus. So I will give her credit for that. She has been able to do it with difficult issues before. This has been kind of on the back burner because there were so many other things that were in the front burner. But we've gotten a lot of those things and moved out of the way. So I think that this is coming to the front burner. We're having, you know, I'm having discussions with my colleagues, but I can't give you an exact number because I don't know exactly, you know.
Right.
I have 33 members that are co-sponsors, and I'm trying to get it to the floor. And the thing is, not so easy to do. It's like in a legislative body, part of what you need to do is to get that, you know, get the push. it requires a lot of moving pieces, right? And that, and particularly on a bill like this, which is going to fundamentally change the way that we deliver healthcare in the state of New York. And by doing that, as you stated earlier, provide a model that will be a model for the rest of the country.
Yeah.
Now that's not nothing. That's not nothing. And we recognize that.
And so what can we do to help? Like, what can we do to help? Like, when you get going or whatever you're doing in the off season, I mean, we are holding a virtual summit on Thursday, a healthcare summit. We have three different panels. So really promoting the nationwide events that are taking place on the 24th. But obviously, as you keep going within New York, we want to sort of stay on top of that and do everything we can to help promote. If there are certain people that need phone calls to be encouraged to get on board, we'd love to put out people's phone numbers and encourage. And we even write scripts. So for people who don't know exactly what to say.
So I would say that this is the thing that, first of all, for people who live in New York, you need to figure out who your assembly member and your senator is. And you need to see whether they're a co-sponsor of the bill. And then you need to actually call them. If they're a sponsor of the bill, thank them for being a sponsor of the bill. Maybe talk about how important it is to you and your family, and then encourage them to not just be a name on the bill, but to be a warrior for the bill.
Right.
Yes.
Because it's one thing to put your name on it. It's another thing to really fight for it.
Yeah. We need to flip. There's people who are not sponsors. There's people who are not sponsors at all. And I'm working on some of them, but some of them are really hard-headed. I don't think it's going to happen. There are people who are sponsors and are warriors, and they're sponsors, and there's people who are sponsors and haven't necessarily made that flip yet. So we got to make them make that flip. In politics, you either do one of two things. Either you show them the light or you turn up the heat. That's what you do.
Yeah.
You either educate them about how important the particular piece of legislation or a particular thing to do, how important this thing is to do. And if that doesn't work, then you turn up the heat. And you put
right, it's sticks and carrots. It's like, and I always say this, it's sort of like with children. It's not really complicated. You incentivize the good behavior and you disincentivize the bad behavior. It's not rocket science. Mm-hmm.
And if there are any representatives who need to be primaried, possibly a senator in Yonkers, for example, then we need to be honest about the fact that not all
he wants to get rid of, who is it?
Stuart Cousins.
Oh,
but
okay.
That not all... Not all representatives are.
I'm gonna let you finish.
And I was just saying that not all representatives are created equal. But I'm only looking at it from somebody who's not in New York and is not well. I mean, I'm fairly aware, but nevertheless, there's probably a lot of things that I'm not aware of. And perhaps, you know, Stuart Cousins is not the person that needs to necessarily be targeted. But I have no doubt that there probably are sitting representatives who are in the way. And then we can even segue that into private insurance and the big pharma lobby and the issue that that presents.
So I will tell you this. As it refers to Andrea, I strongly disagree with you. I mean, everybody can have an opinion. That's fine.
Fair enough.
And the reason I will tell you, as the first woman to be the majority leader of the state Senate, as the first Black woman to be the majority leader in the state Senate, and somebody who has to manage an incredibly difficult, including this knucklehead right here, group of people who are far to the left. We don't have far right people anymore, thank the Lord. But we have, but we do have certain in our conference. We have folks who are moderates and tack right. And then we have folks who are kind of moderate tack left. And you got folks like myself. You got folks like a dude named Jabari Brisport, who's a DSA member. Julia Salazar, who's also. And she has to balance and manage all of that. Now, I'm not perfect and she's not perfect. But I will tell you that I've seen what her leadership has been able to get us. And we might not have been done in the New York Health Act. And that's true. And that's certainly, I banged my head against the wall on that. However, I will repeat again. Whether we got the bill, the marijuana bill that we got because she pushed for it. We got a bill in the state of New York related to safe staffing, which had been trying to get done for 20 years. And it was because of her involvement that we actually got a bill to establish safe staffing, both in hospitals and nursing homes. Whether it was the bill that the bill that we got to get the opioid settlement fund, that was my bill. It was actually through her leadership that we actually managed to get it done with the governor's opposition. And we managed to go through it. She actually led us in making sure that we had the excluded workers fund. I'll remind you, this is something that we managed to get done during the budget. Historic, never been done before. We secured over $2 billion to provide basically unemployment for undocumented people that didn't receive any money during the pandemic. These were all things that we were able to get done just this year under her leadership. Is she perfect? No, she's not. But what I do tell you is that I have been exceedingly lucky and happy to have her as a leader. And I don't think anybody would have been able to manage all the different things that she's been able to manage as far as us knuckleheads, the knuckleheaded governor. She has to sit across the table from this freaking guy. And she has to look at him, and she does. And she does. And she
that's
looks
called
right
falling
at him,
on a big sword. She falls on the – so this is one of those things where people don't really know. They're not on the inside. They don't see it. And some of the issues mm-hmm. that aren't as sexy as others that don't get the attention mm-hmm. but are really important. And actually, for me, cannabis is one of those things that's very yeah. important.
And for a state senator to call out his own governor, I think that that really speaks to your credibility in saying, listen, she's not perfect, but she's not – as far away from where we need to be as you might think. And that's important. And yeah. that's important. And so
especially compared to what we have.
We're in the state that deserves everything that it gets. And if that's not bad enough, I was raised in New Jersey. So I know. It hurts. It hurts. I picked the two worst states to possibly live in.
I'm a second generation native Floridian. So I'm from here. My dad was born in Miami.
So let's talk about the elephant in the room. This is obviously the biggest impediment to why we do not have a universal healthcare system. It is private insurance and big pharma. Mm-hmm. And I am curious as to how that, I mean, if you even had an inkling as to how bad things are in Tallahassee, please enlighten us as to what it's like in Albany dealing with the big pharma and private insurance lobbies.
The thing is, this is what's funny. I'm the chair of the health committee in the Senate. And so these folks have to talk to me all the time. And there's a lot of things that we do agree on. Like and I look them right in the face and I say like, well, that's a good idea on your part, but I still want to pass the New York Health Act and kind of destroy your business model. I still want to do that. So you know that, right? And I smile in their face while I say it. I had, before I became a majority member, I had 8 years in the Senate as a minority member. And one of the things, like, you get a sense, I think that you get a sense from me that I'm a real dude. And I don't want to say that as a, you know, kind of pat myself on the back, but it's just, I've figured out how to do this job, do it well, if I may say so myself, but still be who I am. And so therefore, after 8 years, when I became the majority member, like, I didn't change any of the things that I was saying. And certainly not the only things that I changed in doing was I was actually passing freaking bills because I couldn't do it before as a minority member. So as far as big pharma and the insurance company, like in the insurance industry, like, I know where they are. They know where I'm at. There's not necessarily open warfare because they do know that they have to deal with me on a whole lot of other issues that we kind of agree on. But it's like, but it doesn't bother me none. The issue, the bigger problem is that they have been able to convince some of my colleagues, as well as convince, remember when I talked about some of the leadership in some of the public sector unions, there's been a way that they've kind of gotten to a point where they have become more of an impediment, not by being directly attacking me. They have, I mean, you will know, and I will tell this to every New Yorker, you will know that we are winning and we're going to get the New York Health Act when you see a black and white ad in slow motion with a slow thing coming towards me, showing me looking like getting out of a car, looking even fatter than I am, going like, this man wants to take away your children and your taxes. That's when you see that paid for by the insurance companies of America.
Then we know you're making some serious gains.
Exactly. But they haven't had to do that because what they've done is they've convinced enough folks that, again, remember when I told you about the bird in the hand?
Yeah.
And the mentality that there's a status quo that's kind of stuck and how could it be done any differently? Those two things, they've been smart about this. They don't need open warfare with me. They don't need open warfare with me. And if they do, like, I win. So they can do secret warfare, they can do open warfare. Ultimately, in the state of New York, because there's like doing this job as a policymaker, the only way that I'm able to do it at any level is not only because I surround myself with really smart, talented staffers, but because I've had 11 years of shoving this into my head. There's very few people who would be able to do the job that I'm doing right now. And I'm not saying that because I'm special. I'm just saying because I put in the work over 11 freaking years.
Yeah.
Very few people will be able to come in today and be like, so what about Medicaid? How is that structured? What's happening? Like, what's managed care? What's this? What's the other thing? I've known it because I've been doing it 11 years. And there, because there's still so much stuff that happens that is not sexy, that is not in the front pages, that needs to get done every year around those issues, like I'm in a position where they still have to mess with me. They still have to talk to me. And I got no problem talking to them because I'm going to be who I am, whether I'm on your show or whether I'm on the street with a constituent or whether I'm in the state, in the floor of the Senate. I mean, I might not say motherfucker on the floor of the Senate, but I might say it here. You know
what
I mean?
That's so funny because I say that all the time. Like, I am the exact same person, whether I am in a very, very like vulnerable neighborhood and working with people that, you know, don't even have, you know, pot to piss in versus going to some black tie thing. Actually, I prefer to hang out with the people in the vulnerable neighborhood. But anyway, like I'm the same person. Yeah. I'm going to say the same things. I don't even know if I would refrain from saying motherfucker. I don't even know if I would.
It all depends on this is the way I'd say, and this is actually something that I say to potential people who are potential candidates that I've met through the years, right? That they ask me, you know, for advice, etc. Said, you've got to find a version of yourself that you can share with the world. And the way that I put it is that you're singing the exact same song to everybody. The volume is different, however.
Yes.
When I'm with my friends, like with people that I hang out with, like that's going to 11. But if I'm on the floor of the Senate, then I go to a 4 and a 5, maybe a 6 sometimes. But you see some of the, like there were some debates that I had this year. Now, unfortunately, there's so many Republicans who are like smart Republicans who have and who knew what to do on the floor of the Senate that have retired. And I don't really have any good debaters in the Republicans anymore. But I'm like, every time there's a debate on the Senate, I'm like, bring it. Come on, bring it. And if you see some of the stuff, you'll see me being this guy, except, you know, I won't move as much. And again, I won't say motherfucker on the floor of the Senate because that actually goes on the record. But it's the same. But you got it. But I'm the same guy. So as right. It relates to my work to get stuff like the New York Health Act done. And by the way, there's two big ones that I want to get done next year. There's a bunch of little ones, but there's two big ones. One of them is the New York Health Act. The other one is to create safe consumption spaces, also known as supervised injections facilities. These are places right. That people who inject drugs can actually use them under medical supervision. They exist in a whole bunch of other countries, Canada, most of Europe, and they don't exist in the state of New York or in the country, even though we are in the grips of an opioid and overdose epidemic. Yeah. So,
that's profitable. They don't care because opioid epidemic is extremely profitable.
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, private insurance and big pharma are definitely the two biggest impediments to progress. They are probably the most useless components of our society. And of course, they spend more money in state legislatures and especially on Capitol Hill than any other conglomerate. And there's a reason. They're not necessary. So they're not necessary. They basically have to buy off legislators. And that, unfortunately, is a big part of our problem. But let's say, mm-hmm. and this is a great question, yep. let's say that the ultimate scenario does come to pass and yep. the New York Health Act does come through. What are we going to do in regards to what I would imagine to be a massive migration to New York State? Is there certain rules in place?
Residency requirements,
in terms
yes.
of like how long you have to be a New York yeah. resident in order to receive the health.
So first of all, critics of the New York Health Act can't seem to make up their friggin' minds because they both say that it's going to cause like people are going to leave in droves because they're not going to be able to pay the taxes. And then people are going to move in droves because they're going to be able to get, first of all, there will be residency requirements. Now, the bill does not establish the residency requirement per se. It gives the authority to the agency that will be running the program, which is the New York Health Department, to do that. But that's the same way that residency is established for you going to college in a school, yes. in a state, for you getting your driver's license, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that's a simple one. And as far as people moving to the state, this is something that consistently people bring up. It's like, it's going to bring, people are going to rain down in the state. And it's like,
I assure you, we're like, not all coming there.
It is like, first of all, let's actually, just a couple of things. Number one, whenever there have been states, like for example, the state of New York expanded Medicaid before any other state, right? And we did not have a massive influx of people moving to the state. That's number one. So this idea that just because we're caught, we're creating a benefit and all of a sudden people are going to rain out on the state has not come to pass when we've created other benefits in the past. That's number one. But number two, and more importantly, because there would be a residency requirement, if you are seeking to move to the state, because you know that if you become a resident, now if you become a resident, you have to what? You have to get a place to live. You have to get a place to work. You actually have to become a productive member.
Yeah.
A resident of the state. You actually have to become part of the state. You're buying food. You're buying clothes. You're renting an apartment. You're going to work. You're all these things. And guess what? You will be incentivized to come to the state because unlike any other state, you will be able to have healthcare guaranteed to you because you're a New Yorker. Guess what? I welcome these people coming. And the fact is that these folks, if they are coming, again, you just don't move to a state just because. You move because you have an opportunity there. So actually to create an incentive for people to move to the state who will then in turn become productive members. If they get a job at a place that employs them, that is a state of that is based in the state of New York, they're going to pay a payroll tax that is going to fund the healthcare that they're going to get. So it's, for me, it's a ridiculous.
I agree. Thing. If I was going to move somewhere because of different laws, I would have moved to Colorado as soon as they legalize weed. I don't, you know, it's like, there's a lot of places. Well, my goal in life is to find whichever state has both legalized marijuana and death with dignity at the time that I need to like think about retirement. That's my plan. Those are my people. Any state that has those two things, those are my people. Yeah. I can just tell.
Death with dignity. We're trying to do that. It's not my bill, but it will move through my committee and I'm supportive of it. And that's a big one, but it's not my
bill. Now you guys do that and you get recreational, then I might be having to come up there.
Recreational is done. That's done this year. The governor's kind of standing in the way of it. Surprise, surprise. He has not named, there's a couple of people that he has to name who would be the executive director and the chair of the board. Of the cannabis board, and he sent us some names, and we're like, "What are you nuts?"
You know,
like,
that's a job that I could get behind. That's a job I can. You know what? My husband really does want me to get a job. I honestly, I could be a weed czar.
You could be a weed czar.
For the record,
but I proudly voted for it, and I actually have a bill as well to decriminalize all drugs. If we're going to just go wild over here, but it's like I'm a fan. I'm a fan of the spirits. I've inhaled. It's not my thing.
And that's cool. And I appreciate that. But it should be allowed to be anybody's thing who wants it to be their thing.
God bless. There's some people, my sister loves this stuff. A couple years ago, with my birthday, I spent it with her. This like 3 years ago. I go up to Massachusetts. She's in college over there. We have dinner. All her friends come over, etc. And then she starts smoking some of her professional level stuff. And I'm like, hey, I'm here. I'm with my sister, whatever. And I have like two puffs. I fall down to the ground.
That sounds
like I'm on the ground. Like, what happened? And she's like, you fell. And I'm like, I know I fell. I'm on the ground. But it's like, this is not. So yeah, no, smoke weed. Smoke what, you know, do your thing. But I'm gonna stick to the rums.
So one of the last things that we want to cover, and this is important, of course, obviously, it's the talking point that everyone says all day, every day. How are you going to pay for it? And so one of the big things that we are proponent of is modern monetary theory, the deficit myth. Now, at the federal level, we are, of course,
everybody
currency
check it out.
Issuers, not currency users. But at the state level,
there's a money factor.
You have to manage a budget. So for anybody who is a supporter of MMT and thinks that you can't possibly pay for a statewide universal healthcare system, please debunk that notion right now if you can.
I will debunk it immediately. First of all, it is a system that will cost much less. Why? Number one, because in any type of system like this, what you have a shared risk pool. Now, how about as opposed to having small pools like you're employed, like the 100 employees of a particular company or the 2,000 employees in a particular union. How about you throw in 20 million people? You share the risk around the entire population. Costs go down. Number two, administrative costs. Right now, private insurance companies charge between 15 and 18 cents out of every dollar for administrative costs, which includes big payoffs for the CEOs. It includes all the people that they fight, that fight you on the phone to make sure that you don't get paid for the thing that you already got done to you. So how about we go from that to 3 to 6 cents on the dollar? So we will save a crap load on administrative costs. Number three, Providing and guaranteeing primary care to everybody means that people who right now are not insured, but they're still, I don't know what you call them, yes, human, they will still get sick. They will still trip and break something. I mean, God forbid, but what happens? They go to the emergency room, which provides the lowest quality of care and is the most expensive. So how about, particularly for chronic conditions like diabetes or asthma, we guarantee primary care, which means everybody will be able to go to a doctor and be able to maintain themselves healthy, which will actually cost us less, as well as give everybody a better quality of life. And last but not least, be able to negotiate for drugs with those drug companies that the dude over there loves so much, and be able to do so for 20 million people. So on behalf of 20 million people, as opposed to smaller subgroups, you negotiate and you get your prices down. So you take all those things, you negotiate for drugs and medical devices. You identify primary, you guarantee primary care to everybody. You cut down on administrative costs and you share the risk among all of those folks. You take all of those things, the system will cost that much less. The studies that we have on this, there's two of them. One that was done by a liberal professor, Professor Friedman, his left-leaning professor. But I don't think anybody here would believe that the RAND Corporation is necessarily that left-leaning. And the RAND Corporation actually did a study a few years ago, which tells us that over 95% of New Yorkers would pay less than what they pay now because there's no premiums, no deductibles, no co-pays, no out-of-pocket costs, and no networks. So maybe that was a little longer than you wanted.
No, but it's great.
But that's what we're talking about.
And I want people to understand that now, take that to the national level, and it's the same thing. It's actually cheaper when you have a mass pool of people sharing the risk. Like this is, again, this is not that complicated. It's actually quite
but
simple.
But I still believe that this is the path. This is the way it's going to happen. It's going to have to be a major domino
it's
that
It's all
falls.
On you, Senator.
Yeah, sir. But with that said, what can we do to help you? Because you are
How
going to literally have an army behind you now, because everyone is going to know about this, from everyone in California, everyone in Florida, Texas, Illinois, Michigan, everything in between.
Yeah, we all need to get behind
New
York.
Even New Jersey.
I don't know about New Jersey. I don't know about New Jersey.
Even Red Sox fans. I'll make sure that they fight.
No.
all kidding aside, we really want to make sure that this is, again, one of the biggest mistakes that a lot of progressive movements end up making is they spread themselves way too thin. You have to be like the GOP. You have to hone in on something that you really want, and you never let it go until you get what you want.
Like a dog with a bone.
Yep. And this is exactly what we need to do. This, to me, is our fight. The New York Health Act must pass, and whatever we can do to help, we are going to be here.
Because it sure shit ain't happening here in Florida.
It ain't happening in Florida. So, it will happen at the national level before it happens
in Florida. Florida will probably sue the federal government for making them have to have health.
Yo, it's like they should get Abbott and DeSantis just in a mud fight or something, because they're just competing to see who's the worst governor. And let me tell you, they're going toe to toe right now.
Unfortunately, we're envisioning President Ron DeSantis.
Yeah, I think DeSantis has a much better shot at being the next president. I don't think Greg Abbott is. There's no words for how bad.
No, they're both pretty douchey.
They are.
DeSantis is running for president.
DeSantis 100% has
a. So is Abbott.
Yeah.
And I'm just saying, they're trying to figure out who's the worst. And let me tell you again, right now, I haven't made up my mind. They're both so goddamn egregious that
I'm going to. Well, here's the thing. In Florida, we have an extremely low bar.
Yeah.
Because we had Rick Scott as our governor. So for us coming out of 8 years of that, Ron DeSantis is an improvement.
He is.
And he has done things that I have liked. Whereas Rick Scott didn't do anything.
Before COVID came around, and he just basically played the Trump, playbook to a T. He was doing some really important things on the environment.
Yeah.
And you give credit where credit's due.
Correct.
When you look at the overall body of what's going on,
it's not
and you're measuring up all of these governors. I mean, obviously Cuomo comes to mind, and DeSantis obviously has done a lot of bad stuff. But what Greg Abbott has done, especially with the energy emergency that they've had, and the fact that he just completely gets on his knees for big oil, it is unbelievable how many people have suffered because of him.
Yeah.
And you can only hope I mean, listen, we would take Beto O'Rourke. I don't think he's, you know, the best option necessarily, but to have somebody in Austin that would absolutely serve the state of Texas in a way that actually helps the people rather than hurts them.
Bro, I got three words for you. I got three words for you.
What do you got?
All right, all right, all right.
All right. You know what? Let me tell you something. I vote for anybody who's playing bongo drums naked. I'll vote for anybody. Look, I voted for Bill Clinton because he played the saxophone on the Arsenio Hall show, so I'm an easy guess.
But thank the Lord he was dressed at the time. Let's see.
Well, yeah.
Hey, listen, as a guy, to be completely objective, I can understand the appeal of Matthew McConaughey. There's no two ways about it. 100% understood.
Look, Texas did have Ann Richards. I have to remind people of that. When I moved to Texas, she had just moved on. They had just put in W, moron. And then, you know, and that was when Greg Abbott was running for, it was attorney general. And then he got appointed to the Supreme Court. And I always thought he was douchey then.
And that is the thing that I think is just changing by the day. You know, there has been this focus and wrongfully by a lot of people in the progressive movement of just focusing on the tippy, tippy top. Yeah. You're not going to be able to change what is at the top until you build that foundation at the ground level. What is happening in New York right now, this is the ground level where the biggest impact can be felt. And it could be a tsunami, a movement that could be felt not just all over the country, but all over the world. And again, it's not a putting a burden on you, but what it means
is we're all New Yorkers for this healthcare. This matters for everybody.
And I agree with you. And the answer to your question is that we're going to need to have national attention and pressure as we get to the right moment, right? There will be a buildup over the next couple of months because I had a lot of internal work that I have to do. And there's some institutional work that has to happen because some organizations, which were incredibly effective in getting big things done around criminal justice, around immigration issues and other things, we're kind of bringing them so that they all, because immigration issues, guess what? Healthcare impacts them.
Exactly.
Criminal justice issues, healthcare impacts them. Housing issues, healthcare impacts them. So we're kind of doing a lot of the work behind the scenes to kind of get everybody lined up. And so we should touch base again sometime around probably November or December when we're gearing up for the next session, because the next session, like, we're going to come out, we're going to come up with a bang. But there's some work we have to do between now and then. So what I would ask for your listeners to do is certainly keep track of the stuff that I'm doing. You can follow me on Twitter or Facebook or the Gram, as the kids, I'm sure, are not calling it, and just keep track of the work that I'm doing, and also the Campaign for New York Health. If you Google Campaign for New York Health, you will find that there's a collective of folks that's actually doing some stuff statewide. But we're going to be picking up speed because I believe that we're at a key moment, and I do believe that we can get it done next year. And I'm certainly going to work my ass off to make sure that's the case.
We are so appreciative.
We absolutely are.
Hands down, you are the coolest legislator we have had on our show.
1,000.
Hands down.
Really appreciate it.
if there is a timeline that you may be targeting, is there anything that you can share with us that would make sense? Like around this time, like spring 22, or is there anything that you could share with us that we could start, you know, focusing on?
Well, our session is between January and June.
Okay.
So
basically, in November and December, you're gearing up, and that's when we're going to have to regroup.
That's right.
New York Health in 22. That's basically what it comes down to. So that's what we're fighting for.
We're very supportive, Senator.
Thank you so much for giving me the time.
Where can everybody find you?
You can find me at NY Senator Rivera. That's NYSENATORRIVERA. You can find me the stuff you see on Twitter. You see the spicy stuff. The spicy stuff is me. The stuff that's more informational for my constituency, that's usually my staff. But that is certainly me. You keep track of me on there, on Facebook. You can find me on Instagram, etc. And if you Google my name, Gustavo Rivera, you will find that you will have to go to the third page to get the Mexican ranchera singer that has my name and kind of looks like my cousin. You'll have to go to the third page to find.
I'm going to have to do that.
I pushed him down. My SRO is much better than the dude that sings Mexican rancheras and wears a big hat and looks like my cousin. So there you go. That's it. That's another guy. But to follow the work that I do, and I'm very thankful for you to give me some to share some time with you, and I'm looking forward to actually like joining up like freaking Voltron and getting this one next year.
We will for sure.
Muchas gracias, mi amigo. Buenas noches.
Se cuida. Thanks. Go Knicks.
Oh,
go Nets. Have a good night, brother.
Bye. Take care.
Thanks for watching. If you want to support our mission to transform politics into service, please like this video, subscribe, follow us on social media, and consider joining our Patreon, where you'll get early access to our interviews as well as other exclusive content. Links are in the description. Peace out.